The Lab takes the ethereal to the practical. Our podcast acts like a business school case study for private equity professionals, CEOs, operating partners, and chief transformational officers. We all know transformation is the key to differentiated alpha. Here's how you actually do it. Our audience tunes in to learn from those in the field, getting their fingernails dirty and driving meaningful growth through better operations, technology, and data. We learn from going to business school, teaching at business schools, and applying these lessons in the real world that case studies actually help the insight stick better. Come join us.
Hey guys, we're excited for our next episode on the podcast, generally focused around value creation and private equity. We've got Chris Moy with us today, better known in the circles of intelligence as the architect of digital transformation. He's a guy that's seen it before, done it before, and a lot of people that we've placed successfully into roles benefit from the work that he's done, both at McKinsey and IBM and in various C-suites. So excited to talk about how IQ, EQ, DQ, the digitization, all interact with each other, and hope everyone enjoys it. So Chris, we're excited to continue our podcast around value creation with a subject everyone has heard about, but few can implement effectively, digital transformation. And one of the things that we like about this is the triple Lindy effect of EQ, IQ, DQ. We'll talk about that later on. It sounds sophisticated, but we'll sort of dig into that. We're excited to have you here, you know, with our friend over here. We call you the architect, Chris, because you know, obviously, you've been at McKinsey and IBM where you wrote a lot of the material that a lot of strong transformation officers use. And you've also been in the C-suite of multiple top 10 global PE firms. And then, you know, also consistent is, you know, you and I both share the joy of corrupting young minds in business school. So being an adjunct professor, and whether it's Wharton with you or Columbia, we can debate which is a better school. But anyway, but before we do all that, why don't you give us a brief introduction of yourself? Because your version is going to be more interesting than mine, I'm sure. And we can kind of go from there.
Well, thanks for having me. I'm looking forward to the conversation. It is kind of my passion now. What I would say is my career really has been a journey, a learning journey on how to build great companies. Probably the more recent, you know, experiences are very relevant to digital transformation in particular. As you said, you know, we had talked about the IQ plus EQ plus DQ is really the key variables involved in digital transformation. And just simplistically, what I would say is getting recruited into McKinsey at the beginning of their transformation practice area called the RTS, as a been there, done that guy, they're really, you know, I was told outright, the reason why they hired me is for my EQ. My ability to get things done, because McKinsey was putting fees at risk to actually deliver the results that they were talking about and putting into their PowerPoints. And at the end of the day, I learned a great set of skills there and a playbook for driving large-scale, holistic transformation. And that really centered on this idea that the how to get it done was really the key, not knowing what to do. As you said earlier, everybody knows digital transformation is something we should be doing, and they talk about it all the time. But the question is whether or not you can actually get it implemented. And McKinsey was putting their money where their mouth was, saying, hey, we're going to back up our recommendations with real results, and we'll get paid on those results. So very fortunate to have the opportunity to be there early when some of these things are really being formulated. But in essence, one of the key elements that I learned at McKinsey was this idea of putting in place the performance infrastructure to drive change. And that's largely the playbook that, you know, people that have worked with RTS before, really Bain has a version of it, BCG has a version of it, IBM now has a version of it. All the big consulting organizations that have practices around digital transformation use some methodology, some approach that really structures the way this gets done. And that performance infrastructure in the case of McKinsey was based on the idea that you're really driving cultural change when you're trying to get step function improvements in the way the company works. And those elements are behaviors, processes, and mindsets. Mindsets is a good place to start, getting people to think about what's the end in mind, et cetera. So when I got inserted into this multi-channel consumer company, we drove $220 million of profit impact in 18 months. So really, we used to talk about it as at pace, simultaneous, holistic change that drives step function improvements over a rapid period of time. So a big company, $1.3 billion with many thousands of people there, doesn't change on a dime. But $220 million of documented by the CFO impact is pretty significant. That was done with tools like digital marketing, which was an eye-opener for me because I really, for the first time, I saw the power of digital actually in practice. From there, you know, because I was successful in this, they asked me to write a white paper on the how of transformation as a marketing tool and some other, you know, videos and whatnot. And you'll recall, actually, Scott, I think this is how we originally met. Landcor was the one that actually placed me at McKinsey. And so there was a lot of interest around this idea of what does it take to pull off a successful transformation, and this idea of somebody embedded into the organization right next to the CEO, basically helping to guide this whole process, got a lot of traction. Landcor, McKinsey, Bain, everybody went into that direction. Anyway, as a result of that, I got a really interesting opportunity to go over to Singapore and work with a large industrial company. Their objective was to take 90% of the direct labor out of their operations in the next 10 years. And that was a real eye-opener for me because I'd only seen that one other time in my career when I was in the auto industry and I saw, you know, industrial robots and PLCs taking out 90% plus. So these are disruptive technologies, really opened my eyes to the power of digital. And IBM calls and says, how would you like to implement, you know, digital transformation, big data, digital tools? And from there, that's when I really got the architect of digital transformation, as you talk about, was really the DQ part.
Well, I mean, it's interesting. I mean, that's why we were, you know, our job collectively is always to try and spend time with the what we call the top 5%, right? And so it's nice that you've seen that be successful in McKinsey and, you know, large global companies like IBM and also in the private equity environment. I think the private equity firms realize that, you know, salvation doesn't lie in Excel. So you need some real operational drivers to push that forward. So how do you think about that in this environment today, right? We got high inflation, you know, making it current. How does that play in this environment today? How does it helping the senior leadership teams sort of navigate this market? Does it change it or does it make it more acute? How do you think about that?
Well, I think it definitely makes it more acute for companies that are feeling the pain from inflation. And there's a lot of those companies out there right now. I mean, inflation has hit us like a 2x4 upside the head on top of what we went through with COVID. So, you know, clearly the supply chain intensive type of businesses, manufacturing, distribution, they're seeing some disruption. And they've applied, you know, old tried and true kind of methods, but they're using increasingly more digital capabilities to do better forecasting and put the resources, their limited resources, where it has the most effect. The other area that really has been hammered pretty hard, I'd say, is, you know, anything that's fuel intensive for sure, you know, because that even with the recent comeback in oil and gas prices, it's still up 25-30% year over year, arguably. You know, that's a pretty impactful, negative impact to a P&L when you have those kind of increases over a sustained period of time. Labor has been up largely about 10% on the low end. In particular, it's risen more than on the high end, right? Because those people generally are working paycheck to paycheck. So as costs ratchet up, gas prices, food prices, rent prices, they have to make more money. So the way to do that is really digital. And I saw that for the first time at Crossmark. So it's pretty disruptive is basically what I would say. And you have to have a technology oriented approach nowadays to get the productivity you need to make it work.
Yeah, Chris, look, first of all, thank you for the background and how you do this. I was literally on a phone call this morning with a private equity firm and I dropped the word digital transformation. And they said, man, I wish someone had explained that to me. Like, it is so esoteric. It is so catch-all. So we have the orchestrator. We have the architect. We're going to get into the IQDQ and the EQ and the RTS. But if you just had to simply tell me what digital transformation is, could you do it in a sentence? Because I have a difficult time.
It comes down to applying digital tools to drive process improvements that will fall into one of two categories and sometimes combined. One is to take as much cost out through automation, or in the lean world called frictionless, and digitizing so people don't have to get involved in mundane tasks is a good example. The other one, so frictionless would be one side. The other one would be optimize. And optimization is a lot of what is done with, you know, calculations, forecast, analyses. And so where do you put that inventory? How do you set that promotion? Where you're making a number of small bets or large bets, it's better enabled through the power of machine learning, AI, big data. So that's what I would say digital transformation is in the real world.
That's really helpful because honestly, I think that for it's kind of a catch-all buzzword in 2020, but now we're actually seeing it in practice. And one of the things that when I'm talking to business leaders and private equity firms that I'm noticing more and more is the lean in from everyone in the C-suite into digital transformation, right? Everyone is trying to push efficiency, leveraging technology. And it's a CFO, CEO, CTO, like you mentioned, and CIO responsibility, and even COO. I think it's interesting from your perspective, you've worn multiple hats. How do you play in an environment where there are multiple decision makers and you're trying to align that vision going forward?
As much as that senior team that you just mentioned, all the C-levels would like to think that they have an aligned, you know, view of what needs to be done. What I found is actually you need to spend some time talking about how this stuff is going to affect their business and what specifically we should go after. That involves all elements of the C-suite and the organization. So it is a challenge to get everybody on the same page. It's aligning to the North Star is what I call that. That's really the first phase of the playbook, is to get people to say, well, you know, where is the economic juice in this business? Where can we impact the business? Where are we under attack? Where do we have opportunities? How do we apply new tools that, quite frankly, nobody has seen this stuff in practice? It's so new, you know, so you really have to take a combination on top of that of internal knowledge. This is the IQ part of the equation, and apply the DQ piece, which are these big data and digital tools, which, you know, the digitally native companies really know quite well. And to be honest with you, you know, most companies need to import some of that talent into the organization to help drive the change, because they just don't know. By definition, this is a change that's happening from the outside in.
Well, let's get down to, I mean, to the brass tacks, right? Because one of the things that we keep hearing collectively is that I need digital transformation. How do I do it? So, you know, in a perfect world, you have time to sort of assess a company and think about it and develop in concert the two or three pillars of an investment thesis, of which digital transformation may be one. And sometimes the way the world works is, you know, bids are due in 2 weeks, or, you know, there's a process that's moving quickly. So how do you be thoughtful about that, making this digital transformation, if that's going to be successful, how do you make sure you're thinking about it the right way and just really get started? And we can dip into this thing we keep talking about, IQ, DQ, EQ.
There you start with some financial analysis, really. You look at the value chain, you look at the income statement, and you say, where do we have a lot of people? Where do we have a lot of costs? Where are the variables that you can actually need to control? And, you know, you go after a hypothesis that either falls into the frictionless category or the optimization category. Look, I don't think that there's any PE deals done today, certainly in the sophisticated area of PE, without a digital transformation idea. And so it's not hard to really identify the what, assessing the how, and what are the capabilities of that organization. Can you do that from the outside when, you know, the veil of secrecy is really up and people have their guards up, et cetera? It's very difficult. But I would say largely companies, or PE and the company itself, has a pretty good idea where the digital opportunities are. Again, more difficult later is how you actually apply that. What level of sophistication are you starting with? How much tech debt do you have, et cetera? What kind of capabilities internally from what? People standpoint, and how does that match up with what you're trying to do? That's hard to do from the outside without a deep dive. So maybe if you had more than 2 weeks, you could do it. But realistically, that's a tall task.
Yeah. And when I listened to you, I was going to ask you kind of how you prioritize this move into a digitized world. Correct me if I'm wrong. It almost sounds like if I'm a private equity firm, very first thing I'm thinking about is that EQ. Who are my leaders and can they drive this change? Because like you mentioned, especially call it the top 10%, they know the what. They know the IQ. They know what they need to do with the DQ most likely. But do they have those people that can drive it? Do you, from a leadership perspective, see it that way?
Yeah, there's certainly a leadership assessment that has to happen. You know, and I think, you know, I think one of my skills, you know, I love to have these mirrors put up, and I do assessments to see what kind of person I really am, because it's hard for me to evaluate myself. Never mind other people. Do I know myself? One of the things that I think I'm pretty good at is assessing what people's skills are and how they fit into the organization, because, you know, we've all gone into organizations where somebody has the title, you know, chief growth officer, which really covers the span of developing demand to delivering demand. So customer service on one end and business development on the other. Few people have skills all the way across that spectrum. Now, matching up those skills specifically with what are you going to do for the customer so you can drive some growth is an evaluation that has to happen, you know, with individuals and then the individuals that surround them, because you can often put together teams, because this is going to be a big thing that's going to involve a lot of people. So it doesn't have to be in one person, but it needs to be somewhere in the team. And you can supplement from the outside too. That's one of the other things, just the way that this gets built is very modular.
Yeah, I think one of the things that the best chief transformation officers, chief digital officers always ask us when we're talking about a need within a new private equity firm is this being jammed down the throat of the CEO, or is he or she on board with this? To your point, if it's someone says, I got all the answers here, maybe not said that overtly, so I just need an executor on digital transformation, fine. We find the most innovative ones that are asking better questions and being, you know, very prescriptive with their thoughts. That's often the first question they're asking, like, who's on board with this? Is everyone in agreement that we want to get there? And it sounds like that's something that you're trying to assess as well when you're thinking about next opportunities.
You made me think of the bell-shaped curve I used to talk about. And any situation you walk into, you're going to find some people that are on board, ready to go. They've been waiting for the moment to be told to go. And then on the other end, there's going to be a number of people, you can't move them with a crowbar. I mean, it's just nearly impossible. It's not always obvious who's who at the beginning, because, you know, people play the games they play, but that becomes apparent who's the leaders and ready to go. And then you're really playing for a tipping point of you need to get some people to step up and drive change and other fence sitters to see that, hey, we're really serious about we're going to do this. And look, we're being successful. And so, you know, the way this gets orchestrated over time really does matter. And what I would say is the vast majority of people are kind of like wait and see people. Those are the people you need to win over, but you don't need to win them all at the same time. You need to do it in a structured, orchestrated way.
Well, it's a little bit like when we're joking at the front end about being an adjunct professor or lecturer at business school. You know, you can have a concept and you say it and half the class gets it, half doesn't. So then you got to think about how to say it for the half that didn't get it in a slightly different way. So I imagine one of the things that we've talked about actually in the roles that you've been in is the communication and how that's delivered. And if the super sophisticated folks in the private equity community don't always get digital transformation, how is that going to be played within the, you know, portfolio company itself? So, you know, it sounds like that level of communication in the, again, the EQ, not just the IQ, understanding how to get people on board. There were fence sitters, maybe the beginning, and that's sort of when the shift really happens.
Yeah, I think, you know, you need to have a scorecard, right? People want to be winners, right? So you set up a scorecard to try to get the organization to move in that direction, right? When I talked about earlier, you know, the mindsets are aligned with the scorecard. For example, what are we going to define as success here? Some of that will be the values of the company and how they relate to the financial performance of the company. And we need to, you know, probably further explore that and deepen that in people's minds. Then you got the behaviors, and the behaviors need to be modeled by the CEO first, right? People need to know this is for real. All the top people over time need to either embrace through the new behaviors or they're going to be, you know, put to the side or out of the company somewhere. You know, and the processes that you're really working through, not only to manage the transition, but the process, the business processes that you're acting upon to digitize and transform to a higher level of performance. Tying that back to the financial performance and the mission of the company is really important. And I think that's the inspiration, that's the vision that people want to come to work for, to do. You know, it's not just about the paycheck. They want to believe in what they're doing. And I think that's a key part of digital transformation that perhaps is underestimated, is the importance of inspiring people.
The very first time we spoke, we talked about Simon Sinek and Start With Why. And my background has nothing to do with digital transformation, special operations. And when we transitioned out the thing that we had to do to set us up for success, this career leadership process they told us to do was start with your why. So I think that really resonates. The scorecard's great. Have a scoreboard. Go, you know where the end line is. Go get it. But why are we doing it? And if you can connect with the people, then they rally behind the mission. And I love that approach.
Yeah. And Simon Sinek, you know, he's one of my favorites. There's no question. The way he talks about start with why, and then you get to the how, and then you get to the what, is very complementary to the ideas that McKinsey was putting forward with the key to successful transformation.
Well, you know, listen, that's why we've got the architect, right? This is why you're here. This is why we're excited to talk to you. And sort of, you know, this is the idea to have case studies and help other people on that journey of transformation, specifically digital, but other, you know, transformation is a broad topic. So Nick and I are super thankful to have you join us, and hopefully others will pick up on some of the nuances and the specifics and, you know, drive that transformation more efficiently.
I really enjoyed the conversation. I look forward to what comes next, because analog to digital is going to be here for a while.
Hope you guys enjoyed that. Scott, I'll tell you, the more I think about digital transformation, the less I think about technology and the more I think about people. It's crazy. The last two folks that we've spoken to, Al and Chris, have been very dialed into the EQ and the change management and the change champions and the connecting with humans at the C-level to drive the change. You have to see it just by the nature of your work. But I mean, do you find it a challenge to find the right folks, or at the level where you're placing people, do they kind of get it? Or are you doing any coaching even?
Yeah, I think that, you know, that was the whole premise of us building this firm this way, is that numbers are important. It's the people that drive change and drive differentiated alpha. So to your point, it is hard to determine if someone's going to be the right fit. Do we think they're technically capable? Of course, that's the first screen. Then it becomes PE firm A versus PE firm B. That's interesting. Maybe even more importantly, partner A versus partner B at that same PE firm. And what are they looking for in their C-suite talent? And how's that going to play with them? So there's a lot of nuanced assessment that has to go on. The first one is, can we do the job? That's relatively straightforward. Then it becomes, to your point earlier, it's about the people and the culture and the fit and how they're going to connect to drive change in an efficient manner.
Yeah, and I think it's also interesting, kind of the growth at the C level, especially being placed from PE. I started at Resourcive 5-6 years ago. CFO was a little bit around, but very much more dollars and cents. Now in the enterprise, they're really leaning into strategic sourcing at the IT level. They are a sounding board for the IT leader. And it's really interesting to be able to see that aligned leadership and shared responsibility to a certain extent when we're doing, you know, that digital transformation in practice. Because, of course, the CIO has the budget that they have to are worried about and hitting their 3-5 year roadmap goals. But at this point, man, everyone is talking about this. So when you're placing folks from the PE firms, I'm sure they're asking for the most experienced, best and brightest. And that's why we're talking to folks like Chris, because he sat in all the roles. So it's very unique to have his perspective.
Yep. And he has a nice ability of himself to be both intellectually curious and humble, right? Those are things that don't go together often. But, you know, knowing that although there's playbooks and there's shared experiences and there's best practices, every deal is different. So you need to be thoughtful about that and let that play into each asset. So it's been great to connect with him, and hopefully folks will find it beneficial.
We'll be back again with another great episode. Really excited to be launching this. And again, the focus is on value creation of PE, and that's what we'll be doing here.
Thanks.